Yeah, this is gonna be the last time I address this. Illuminated. I'm listening to this clown talking, how he traveling around, acting like he's in the witness protection. The light program. No, ma'am, I'm not buying into your lies. Oh, you so fly? Sounds like you mad because I set the trend amongst men, and I'm the one that did it when I brought in suits and ties. Zodiac. Choke, no joke. Illuminated. Choke, no joke. I'm saying your name. Choke, no joke. But they don't know how choke goes broke. Illuminated. Got so many niggas saying my name. It's almost as if they want me. And they ain't even talking about my wife. You would think they would want me. I'm a savage. But they ain't even talking about life. They just acting like my aunties. All they missing is a head rag standing in front of the stove. When I'm coming in, all they gotta do is say, "Are you hungry, ho?" We are warriors of the light. Doesn't matter though, cause they stuck on the ground, right? I don't even address them, they don't even get a sound bite. Speaking of addresses, the only dresses that you use to impress us is the ones that you got on YouTube, or your Facebook, or your Cash App. But nigga, I can do you one better. Send me your Cash App, Georgia Guidestones. You niggas weird. Don't even dye your beards. You're looking like Oscar the Grouch in many of these YouTube videos. He was holding the camera. I was the star in the studio. Illuminated. You're bringing up young Chris, but you stayed on young's dick. Joke, no joke. Acting like he travels the globe, but he knows that he's local. The only Chris people even give a fuck about is the nigga that wrote these hoes ain't loyal. Georgia Guidestones. I don't need the Illuminati to move your body. I can just have the city to dump you off in the river, make it quicker. And I can do it hands-free, making sure I won't touch your body since you niggas can't stand me. Illuminated. What's free? Free is when a nigga like Choke No Joke was all over my dick just last week about how Dame tried to steal my chick. Now, because Kareem Big said from his lips that you ain't shit, now you pissed. And for these two knucklehead niggas who run around the town running their mouth committing crimes without a thought. Illuminated. I don't know what you was taught. But in this game, do you really want to change? You're gonna have to change. Illuminated. It's either you took the pledge or not. Don't mess with the black ops. Get your head filled up with knots. Georgia Guidestones. This is for all of these new niggas out here coming at me all sideways and shit. You know, I'm still in my zone. I'm still gonna make my moves. You know, if I see something I like, I'm gonna take it. That's just how the game goes. You know, from rocking cane goals to changing the same flows to the same holes, I'm always gonna come at different angles. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The point is, I joke about racism, because racism is a fucking joke.
Savage!
Solomon.
He is Mr. Solomon.
You know something? At least he's honest.
Ladies and gentlemen.
He's a goddamn weapon.
Can you hear me in the back?
Black men.
Sincere.
I'm so sincere.
S-I-N-E-C-E-R-E. Sincere.
I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover. Politicians, the celebrities.
Nobody does it better.
Welcome to Thought Crimes, everyone. This is your girl, Sincere.
Of course, this is your man, Prince Solomon. Of course, you are now listening to the official podcast of the dynamic duo known as Thought Crimes.
Thought Crimes, are you mad?
Absolutely. So let's get into it, man. We're talking about Jay-Z, Jigga. Is he a villain? Is he a hero? People coming out of the woodworks. People calling Auntie Choke No Joke, or Choke No Joke is the truth. But he's coming out here talking about Jay-Z is a part of working with the Fez. Jay-Z was hating on Young Chris.
Yeah.
Jay-Z stealing niggas' style, it's niggas' flavors. Mm. What is going on? Is Jay-Z a saint or is he the devil?
Ooh. Kill Jay-Z. They'll never love you. You'll never be enough. Let's just keep it real, Jay-Z. Fuck Jay-Z. I mean, you shot your own brother. How could we know if we can trust Jay-Z? And you know better, nigga. I know you do. But you gotta do better, boy. You owe it the blue. You had no father. You had the armor. But you got a daughter. Gotta get softer. Die, Jay-Z.
Now, that's the title right there. Saint or Devil. I like that. I like that. Well, look, so here's the thing about it. Look, from a hip hop perspective, like we talked about before, you know, these guys are artists in the industry, right? You have to be careful when you even just moving into the industry. You just never know because people are still people despite their notoriety and their accomplishments and things of that nature. Now, for me, listening to Jay-Z as I, you know, grew up, I clearly saw there was something he incorporated in his style. From, if you want to talk about from the Blueprint to even Blueprint 2.5, 2.0 to even definitely Black Album and especially on Kingdom Come, that I was like, well, you know what? I remember Young Chris pulling out of that space a little bit. You know, what I'm
saying? Young Chris style was something new.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard this day and age to come with something fresh lyrically.
Something, yeah.
Like in the musical sense, people are still finding something, little pockets, but lyrically it's been hard. Even back then, you know, the early 2000s. So when you have Young Chris and Young Guns coming out, but Young Chris in particular, that conversational whisper type of rapping that was so fly, it's really sad that, you know, Jay-Z just took that whole thing and was able to move forward with it. And this is not a complete indictment on Jay-Z. Like we said, we don't know him personally. We don't know none of these people. We're not caping for no one, and we're not demonizing anybody. This is just a conversation.
I just still don't know how I feel about all of it altogether. I think I was more interested in like what prevented Young Chris from being the biggest thing out of Philly. You know what I'm saying? Because I thought he had the star quality. He had the charismatic magnetism behind himself. He had witty narrative skills, and him and his boy could craft a hit. But even by himself, he had a very great ear for beat selection that would get the public. You know what I'm saying? So when I would think about that, you know, I kind of thought, you know, in essence, the Young Guns were, as far as an act, they were much bigger than even State Property. I know people like State Property as the roughhousing, Wu-Tang-ish cats from Philly. They just kept guns everywhere. But I just felt Young Guns had something to offer because they had already had crossover appeal, period. And that was something that Rockefeller struggled with the likes of Freeway. And even at times, Beanie had singles that crossed over, but his whole persona himself, it was hard to sell that to the general public because Beanie Siegel is, like he said, I slept in the projects on the floor even when I had the money. He was that type of cat. But the Young Guns, he had these two fresh Philly boys. They had bop style. They can get kind of gully when they wanted to, but they still was fresh and clean for the youth as well. So I think, for me personally, them, how they disappeared in all that Rock Civil War, I thought that was very interesting. That's what I was more interested in. But I'm going to talk about more about the style selection, too, as we continue on with this particular podcast.
And to remind people of what we're talking about, because some people don't know who Young Chris is or Young Guns, but when they hear some of these tracks, it may refresh their memory. So let's play a couple of tracks for the people to check out to know exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about the Jay-Z flow from 2003 to now, and also what Young Chris brought to the game.
Six Figure. Young Gunners, young Gunners, Chris and Neve.
That's right.
Yeah. It's official State P representatives. Can't stop, won't stop. Rockefeller Records, cause we get down, baby. We get down, baby. Girls, the girls, they love us. Cause we stay fresh to death. You're the best, nothing less. They don't make us a break, cause when they make up the break up.
No.
See the Jacob fix they little makeup. That's them Young Gunners, Chris and Lil Neve.
Wishing they was the one.
But Chris got Lil Kiki.
Feel my pain, Young Gunners, Chris and Neve, it's real shit, North of Death, home of Philly, Lights getting dimmer, nights getting colder, lost three of my soldiers, life feel like it's over, unloading if something in my way don't ever take me alive. I got something on the way. I'ma survive, I'ma try to do straight, try to make it alive, be around for that due date.
Yeah, always felt to me from Reasonable Doubt, I mean, even if we've seen periodically, Jay-Z throughout his career had been slowing his flow down, slowing it down to the point where it's almost coming across as spoken word poetry and he's just talking to you, right?
Turn the music up, turn me down. Guru, let's go get him again. This time is for the money, my nigga. Brooklyn, stand up. Never been a nigga this good for this long, this hood, or this pop, this hot, or this strong, with so many different flows. This one's for this song, the next one I switch up, this one will get bit up. These fucks too lazy to make up shit, they crazy, they don't paint pictures, they just trace me. You know what, soon they forget where they pluck, they whole style from, they try to reverse the outcome. I'm like, cunt. I'm not a biter, I'm a writer for myself and others. I say a big verse, I'm only bigging up my brother, bigging up my barrel. I'm big enough to do it, I'm that barrel. Plus I know my own flow is foolish, so the rings and things you sing about, bring them out. It's hard to yell when the barrel's in your mouth, I'm in.
So I think to me personally, I was more interested in that because even when I listen to Meg Thee Stallion, right? Meg Thee Stallion to me is like, she's like Bun B and Pimp C rolled up into one person.
You were the first one to say that.
You know, and I mean, even when she, her enunciation of certain words is reminiscent of how Pimp C used to stretch his words. When I'm coming down, when I swing it wide. Another person who does that is Big Crit. Big Crit has a lot of Pimp C in his flow. You know, he just chooses to chop his energy up, you know, leaning more towards Outkast, or if you're talking about 3-6 Mafia at times, or even if we're talking about some of the cats coming out of Texas, which why he had that song, he learned it from Texas. So you can hear Devin the Dude. The thing that makes Jay-Z interesting is the level of his notoriety and his prominence, right? And to see young Chris his career completely stopped, and given that he was so loyal and dedicated, I would even say far more loyal and dedicated than Meek Mill, because young Chris came in with State Prop and all of those associative acts, but that was still by way of Rockefeller Records. Meek Mill was linked in through Rick Ross and Maybach Music, and instead of being next to Rick Ross, it became about Meek Mill standing next to Jay-Z. So I think Jay-Z, to me, personally, above even style biting, I think he just politics very well. He's a politician. He's like Barack Obama. He's very smooth with a lot of things.
And don't get me wrong, yeah. Like Jay-Z is still like top five, like top 10,
right?
You know, greatest rappers alive. He has a pretty nice discography, but that's is something important that's very important to know is about that 2003 to now flow. And of course he implements other things in there too. It's not just that, you know, he's other flows that he's picked up on that he's made into his own. And there's a question on that, you know, when does it become thievery?
Yeah.
And when is it flattery? You know, we saw with Because Jay-Z's not the only one who had these accusations. You had Nas, you have Eminem. You had so many people who've been accused from lifting from their friend and not giving them enough credit. You know, like what people said about Kanye West and Kid Cudi. You had, or Jay-Z to Kanye West, or Jay-Z to young Chris. So you've always had this in the industry where people have allegedly bitten up from people who were just new that they signed and then they put on the shelf, or people they also at least seemingly had a good relationship with.
Yeah, that is true. And even extending beyond the rap hip hop space, Lady Gaga and her dead best friend, she had a best friend that they both were writing music together. And a lot of the styles and even some of the concepts early on in Lady Gaga's career, you know, she incorporated that from her friend, you know, and, you know, there were some people that knew both of them when they was kind of like, yo, you just kind of took a lot of her stuff. But it does become a question of, you know, when is it thievery? When is it influence? When is it inspiration? When is it motivation? And I can't think of the author's name, but they had a book called Still Like an Artist. Right. So I will say this, though, about Jay-Z. Yes, historically in his career, he has been a chameleon. It's part of the reason why he has lasted so long. Like, I actually look at Jay-Z like we look at a Fortune 500 company that has still been able to remain relevant, right? They are changing with the times at all times, right? They seize on moments. They seize on trends. They seize on events. I think Jay-Z was one of the first big ones in that space to really capitalize on that and stay with that. Like, Jay-Z was largely, that's why a lot of people was getting at him with his 444 speeches, right? But he was largely responsible for the second wave, the early second wave of the bling era, right? You know, when you're talking about, I mean, he was one of the first rappers coming out talking about platinum chains. Like, a lot of people didn't know what the hell a platinum chain was, but Jay-Z come out with a platinum chain. He had a jersey on. That's why it was funny when they were rocking them football jerseys in the 90s when football really meant something, the NFL meant something to the culture. Like, a lot of cats, Master P was rocking them in videos, Cam'ron was rocking them in videos. Jay-Z used to rock a platinum chain on top of a football jersey.
And I'm glad you mentioned that real quick, because Jay-Z's really smart. The reason why he's outlasted a Nas, if you're talking about just relevance in music, although Nas is an icon and a legend in rap music, it's because he did implement a lot of the South. And that is the thing that's in right now. The South is big right now. It's been for, I guess you could say, at least 10 years or maybe even more than that. They've been dominating rap music. And Jay-Z was actually one of the few East Coast rappers from New York to, while at the same time having a lot of Philly cats be influential in his sound and music, also at the same time pulling a lot from the South.
I think that's really the question there, even beyond the Young Chris thing. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's more so a Philly's influence on Jay-Z per se, even to the point of where he, how he started wearing his clothing, how he started wearing his fitted caps. You know, that's all Philly. That was all Philly. What I will say to this, to bring up your point, I would say for the South, right? I know people like to bring up Outkast. I think they're fantastic. Of course, Goody Mob, you know, two of my favorite groups, right? We get it. We get it. We get it. But at the same time, I think cracking the paradigm in hip hop was largely due to Master P, right? And ever since then, that's where the South's reign kind of started taking shape. Now, here's the thing about it, to kind of accentuate what you were saying. Here's the thing, to kind of highlight a little bit more of what you're saying here, and then just to put it in perspective for those people who may be unfamiliar with the history of hip hop in this regard, you know, Master P was, you had a deficit. You had Biggie Smalls, King of the East, Tupac, King of the West, both get their heads taken off. There was a void in hip hop. Even when you had people coming out, like, the void was so big. And it was weird. It was a weird thing because you just lost two giants in hip hop that were at the height of their career.
And we set this up too real quick? Because this is going to be very important point to your as well. And remember, Tupac was a West Coast king with a blend of West Coast and East Coast. And Biggie was an East Coast king with the same type of mixture. Because like you always said it before, one of his favorite rappers was Snoop Dogg. And you actually heard that that in Biggie's flow at time, even though his flow was uniquely his own,
his voice,
and he had East Coast influence, but you can hear
he
that
he had better bars.
Later down the line, we will see with some of these other artists that finally the South was injected into that too, but not at that time. Like Tupac and Biggie was both mostly just West Coast, East Coast babies.
Oh yeah, that's what the whole West Coast, East Coast beef. There was no South like in the middle talking about, oh, they trying to mediate. It was only when Andre 3 Stacks when said, you know, the South is here, we got something to say. And, you know, you even have a slight civil war, cultural war in the South where people was like, well, you know, Atlanta. I was like, well, when he got up there, he spoke for the South. And everybody nodded their head at the time. Because I remember all the people in Atlanta when I was younger, the older people, they were happy about that. That was a big moment for them. But so here's the thing about it. There was a void in hip hop. You know, Biggie and Tupac both take, you know, the L in the figurative space of life and career, right? Then within that void, this is where Kirk Franklin's rise come in, because he was the first one to do that major Christian hip hop crossover. Remember, he had that big single called Stump. And people even forget there's a single where he even has a brother that raps just like Biggie Smalls, and he looked like him too. And but he was talking about it from a God perspective. And in fact, we'll have the clip right here. You feeling him? 500 days left into the new millennium. You hearing him? Trump is on the sky cracks. The last, the first, the last, it won't pass. So don't be caught slipping, brother. Don't be tripping, brother. Cause when I see him, I'm giving really him, brother. Say we move too much, we do too much. And if you step against us, then you lose too much. Ain't no stopping what we doing when
when the spirit is moving. Don't be hating what I'm doing, I'm the vessel he's using. Everywhere I be, they try to judge me, they try to shake me, they try to buzz me, but they can't break me, cause I'm down with Christ. Dog child, a new nation, and we feel alright. Well, alright.
Yes, sir.
And the reason why I wanted that clip to be brought up, because you got to remember, there was a fear in hip-hop like that point in time, because people like East Coast guys would not travel to the West after what happened to Biggie. And there was cats from the West that didn't want to go to New York after what happened, you know, with Biggie, because it was like, yo, this is crazy. And we saw what happened with Tupac. Master P comes in, you know, from the South. It's different music. He got a bunch of drill tanks running around. He's got a bunch of fatigues on. And it's really just bouncing music. That's all it is. It's like, all right, everybody was serious. Now we're here to have fun. That's what the South's interest or inception to hip hop became in that space. Don't get me wrong. They had the Scarfaces. They had the Devin the Dudes. But let's be real. Those guys didn't sell nowhere near as many units as Master P. And Master P, and then we also had 3-6 Mafia, but again, they weren't selling as much as a Master P. Now, after that, you had your Pastor Troy's, then you have your Lil Jon's come in. That's when Lil Jon, that's when Atlanta became the crunk music, and you had Ying Yang Twins, and moving forward, it just became that type of energy. Now, to your point about what you brought up with Jay-Z, two artists showed love to the South from New York that was big, and the other one doesn't get the credit he deserves. It was LL Cool J. LL Cool J decided to throw Master P on that single of 5-4-3-2-1, even though everybody gets on the verse, but he still put him in the video, you know, and he had no problem. LL's mentality was, well, I have no problem. He says, I'm embracing all elements of what's going on in the rap space, because he said, this is how you're supposed to do it. Jay-Z was the one that went down South and got with the producers. And to be honest with you, Jay-Z's first really knockout club hit, because Annie wasn't a club hit. It was a hit, but people weren't.
It was a hood hit.
Yeah.
I mean, some people may be confused by that. You could have a hood hit
right,
and not be a club hit.
Right. You know, it's just like when people sitting in their Crown Vicks and, you know, it comes on.
And in their car and they're saying, it's hard enough. You're walking through the kisses. Yeah, all that.
Yeah, you're right about that. And you know, you're walking through the Bed-Stuy projects, you hear, or, you know, you hear it playing somewhere in the background. But his first big, like, real hit to keep the club bouncing was with UGK. And then from then on, like, Jay-Z kept interworking. Even, like, this shows you how much of a politic and a chameleon he is. Look at Jay-Z when he first came out. Then go to Reasonable Doubt. Right. Then from Reasonable Doubt, go to Volume 1, then Volume 2, then Volume 3. Each album, it was changing and it was changing to the point by the time he got to Volume 3, he was on his quote unquote futuristic Pharrell shit, Neptune shit. Because remember, he was riding heavily off the Neptunes too as well, who were Virginia's ideally classified as a South with a lot of East Coast swag as well.
Right.
But their production nonetheless hinted to a lot of bounce in their music. You know what I'm saying? And Jay-Z was one of, like you said, he was one of the first big, you know, New York dudes, like, I'm going to go down here and rap on Southern production.
It makes sense. That's why people don't understand. That's why he's the most relevant East Coast rapper right now.
Yeah.
In the South.
Right.
And why he's influenced so many Southern rappers like T.I. and Jeezy.
Yes.
It's because of that.
Yeah.
I mean, when you got Pimp C and Bun B in your video, when you say you also looked up to Scarface, you listened to his music.
He dropped their names in music. He did that routinely.
And Jay-Z did it a lot. Like Lil Wayne, he's influenced Lil Wayne as well. But he was influenced by a lot of Southern rappers that you hear it. And he went even further than LL. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's because of his vocal frequency, Jay-Z has been able to cop more regions than any other rapper until Drake, which is why it was pretty interesting their beef that they had. But
you're stepping on my toes.
Jay-Z extends to Virginia. He extends to Louisiana, mm-hmm. To Tennessee, to Georgia, to Philadelphia,
to Texas,
to New York, to Texas. Like, I mean, the dude has been using a lot of the frequencies and the vibrations of some of the hottest regions musically. Mm-hmm. And putting it back into him and his sound. And that's why, out of all the kings of New York and the mecca of hip hop culture and stuff of New York,
right?
That's why his frequency still is reigning as high frequency right now, and the South that is the king of rap music right now.
Yeah, because look, I'll tell you how people view Jay-Z in the South. With the Nas and Ether thing, there was a moment where Nas had everybody's attention for about, I would say, 6 months to a year. I know, and it's not shitting on Nas and artists, but I'm talking about in the popularity game. Because you know what I'm saying? This is somebody that just hit Jay-Z in the mouth after Jay-Z just dropped a classic called The Blueprint, right? So you would have people that would say, yo, man, I think he lost that one. But they never turned Jay-Z loose in the South. They was like, nah, man, that was an L, but fuck out of here. Like, Nas, like, all that other shit he talk about, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear some money shit. That's how niggas are in the South. Like, I want to hear some money shit, right? That's why I say it was interesting with his 444 speech, why he caught such... In fact, Jay-Z caught more flack from the South, if people paid attention. Because East Coast people, they was like, that's right, it's about time you got back on your God body trip, in some cases, right? But a lot of dudes in the South, they were kind of thrown because... They're like babies coming out of the Jay-Z era. You know what I'm saying? So Future was influenced by Jay-Z. Bootsy can cry all he want. He was clearly influenced by Jay-Z. A lot of guys in the South were very much so influenced by Jay-Z. What I didn't know about Jay-Z in the South is that people enjoyed his quote-unquote philosophy of getting your money, right? That's what made the whole Rockefeller camp thing beautiful, is that it was just a bunch of niggas getting money. It was different than Def Row.
Talk about that. He picked it up from Master P, though.
That's what we said.
That's why he's so relevant in the South.
Right, and that's the thing. But see, he has those adaptive qualities where he knows what to take and not how to take too much of it without looking crazy.
Right, and people may get confused.
Right.
Nas is super New York mecca, Rakim baby.
Right.
Does he use influence from the South if you're talking about blues? Yes.
Absolutely. His daddy.
But here's where the difference, because some people may get confused.
Yeah.
Everybody take elements from everywhere. So even Nas take elements from the South. But if you're talking about Southern rap, a distinct sound, even though it's influenced by the blues, is still somewhat different. That is something that Nas has never been able to capture. Again, he's been able to capture the blues, the origin point essence of the blues, and implement that into his music. But he's never been able to implement the sounds of a Timberland, the sounds of a Pharrell, the sounds of a Master P, a Bum B, a Pimp C. These are things that Jay-Z has been able to do, and which is why he's still very popular now.
You know what I find interesting about that? I like what you brought up with Nas. Nas is more, he is blues. Nas is blues. He's blues. He's soul. He has a lot of aspects of jazz in him too.
Right.
But Jay-Z is jazzy, hence his name Jay-Z, right?
Right. There's a difference.
Yeah, so that's why Jay-Z has a very malleable flow. Like, he jumps on any beat and he always bending his flow to the beat. Or he bends the beat to his flow, right? And I think that's something interesting, because Jay-Z leans more off of the flowing aspect of Rakim, whereas Nas leans more so off the lyrical aspect of Rakim. And then on top of it, too, let's just kind of keep this real, Sin. Jay-Z made a statement about his voice one time. He said he, early on in his career, he didn't like his voice. Jay-Z's voice is very unique because it always sounds young. Like, at any point of his career, his voice, it always sounds young. When you listen to Scarface now, you hear Scarface's age in his voice. When you listen to 50 Cent rap now, you hear his age. I mean, 50 Cent never had the most baritone-driven voice, but you can hear the gruffiness in his voice now that, you know, you could tell, like, his vocal cords are a bit chunky now. Right,
and hip-hop is a young man's game.
Jay-Z's voice has always been able to sound young. Like, I mean, it's the weirdest thing to me. That's why I always call it like a, it's kind of like a seal. You know what I'm saying? It's like slick like a seal. But I think that's, again, going back to the original point here, I think that's what kind of drove him sonically to Young Chris's energy, though. The Young Guns energy.
Yeah, because the Young Chris is definitely a major influence on Jay-Z.
Right.
I mean, when Young Chris comes into the picture, though, because people forget the South enters Jay-Z's music before 2003.
Yes.
But when Young Chris comes into the picture, it's ironic that Chicago becomes even more influential with Jay-Z at the same time, too. This is where Chicago and Philly collides, you know, during that period. Actually, a little bit before, even with the Blueprint. the blueprint all the way up, all the way up even till now. But Chicago and Philly, that's where you see that vibration between those two cultures be very influential in Jay-Z's musical catalog.
Because, like, think about it like this. When I listened to Chance the Rapper, and you, I had to give you the credit because you put me on to Chance the Rapper, because I wasn't, when I first heard his voice, I thought it sounded too much like a chipmunk. It turned out it was this specific track he had altered his voice for that. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But Chance the Rapper makes College Dropout music. He makes College Dropout Kanye West music. That period, production-wise, where Kanye West sounded like that on College Dropout and all of the people that was helping him as well. But it's clearly Chicago. Because even when you listen to No Name, similar energy. Early Vic Minta, similar energy. So what they did was take that and put it up under the East Coast Cats flow, Jay-Z, and that's how you got the blueprint, right?
Right, which is very important. And I mean, I you probably want to touch on that more, but I just want to throw another piece in this conversation.
Go ahead.
One thing, dude, that Choke No Joke said that we have to do take into consideration, against we don't know all these people and we're not taking sides, we don't give a fuck like that. But is it hating too a part of this conversation need to be talked about? Because Kanye West performs with Coldplay, then Jay-Z performs with Coldplay. Kanye West does 808 Heartbreaks, a classic album. Then Jay-Z talks about Death to Auto-Tune. Jay-Z says him and Nas is cool, but then him and Beyonce drop an album on his album, and he gets no promotion on Tidal, even though Nas has been supporting a Tidal. We've seen him do it in a nice way, like when he's I Wear My Hair Free, Carefree, right? The J. Cole look. That's the nice Jay-Z. But we've had seen the version of it where it seems malicious too. We've seen that, you know, with Young Chris, which is why that's being brought up too. We have seen that side of Jay-Z as well.
You know, that's what I was about to get into, because when the South really was on their bling shit, right? And Jay-Z was picking up the mantle where Mace dropped it. Because let's be honest, Mace dropped it because he left. And he was scared, and he was getting death threats because he was the next biggest thing on Bad Boy Records, right? So he was like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I just seen two dudes get killed, and one of them I was close with. Remember now, Biggie even said it on Life After Death, you know, still knocking Mace shit, right?
Right.
Jay-Z did incorporate elements of Mace's flow and style into his style as well for that resurgence of Jay-Z.
That's a good point. He's a Brooklyn dude who put a lot of Harlem flavor in his music.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Right? So when the South really got on the bling shit, he talked more about it as well. And again, like we say, he went down that way too to absorb some of that energy. So even when I looked at the situation where I saw Kanye West, you know, did the Coldplay thing, and then I see him do the Coldplay thing with the Beach Chair, which arguably it wasn't as good as Kanye's. It wasn't, because Kanye West did I'm Coming Home or something like that, and then Jay-Z did Beach Chair. But I do see right now, like, okay, you have your Kendricks, you got your J. Cole's, you know, when you have albums like To Pimp a Butterfly, the two hip hop albums I feel that are very influential of this particular era of young MCs right now would be To Pimp a Butterfly and Forest Hill Drive, right?
Right.
Jay-Z does 444.
Right.
And
And then he shits on the bling bling South culture that he was influenced with. Anyway. Just like he shits on some of the other people. Right. I know. That's why some people are like, what?
Future. Wait, what? So I'll just say this.
He's a motherfucker, though.
Well, let's go back.
We even move on to this, I think that's why he just outwardly did what he did with Drake.
Yes.
Because he felt, I think Drake was the one.
You can't duplicate.
He couldn't duplicate because he's not that suave R&B guy. Now, I know Drake is not suave like that. He's goofy as fuck. But his style works for him when he does that type of music. That take care stuff, that emotional, vulnerable, new millennial male type of music. He couldn't go. That was the first lane that he really couldn't implement. Like, he could implement, like you said, I Wear My Hair Free, Carefree, the 444, the Pimp a Butterfly,
yeah,
the Forest Hill Drive.
Absolutely.
All those things he can do, but he cannot do the super emotional, vulnerable, I'm hooked on a woman.
Right.
People would get, he did Vulnerable when he talked about,
right,
song Cry, but he didn't make himself vulnerable.
He even says it in the song.
He was talking about the vulnerability of the woman.
He even says it in the song, though. I can't see him coming down my eyes, so I got to make the song cry. Right? Think
right
about that. And we're forgetting something very interesting here. Right? We're forgetting something very interesting here. There was another era that people kind of gloss over that Jay-Z was messing around in that space as well. Remember when Kanye West was really becoming a mogul performer? Because like he was becoming, right around 808 is where he was getting into God mode, right? He was in God mode, right?
Right, right? But you're right, even before that, when the Teddy Bear, the performances he had, Jay-Z before never had performances like that. Kanye West, when he had a Teddy Bear, he had John Legend up there. He did Jesus Walks, some other stuff. People were astonished that you had this hip-hop guy. I mean, we've seen dope-ass big performances by MC Hammer stuff.
Right.
But not in that really deep, emotional rap, but theater type thing. Like, Kanye was the first one to really implement that on stage.
I'll give you another one here. And this is a point I'm speaking to as well, right? Kanye West has an underrated live performance album that I feel is a classic called The Late Orchestra.
Right.
What he did was take songs from The College Dropout and mostly songs from Late Registration, which could easily be my favorite album from him, right? But what he did, he put a symphony band behind it, a symphony orchestra behind it. Not a band, but a symphony orchestra. I remember early on, Kanye West said in interviews, he said, it's a shame rappers, he was basically saying, it's a shame rappers do not do more live performances with live bands.
Well, Jay-Z does and now, then, so.
Boom. But
Kanye got his wish.
Jay-Z moving forward from Kingdom Come on was performing with live bands. And then on top of that, let me go into another spot, right, that people kind of miss with Jay-Z, right? When Kanye West did 808, right, and he had everybody dressing like him. Remember, now, there was a particular era of hip-hop that we kind of gloss over that Andre 3 Stacks was a part of, Farnsworth Bentley was a part of, but Kanye West was leading it fashionista style, right?
Especially with that track with Ella, wait, I may be getting her name wrong. I think it's Ella when they did American Boy.
Yeah.
And he did that goofy cut just to say, yo, I'm Kanye, I can do what I want.
Right.
And that personified the fashion, right, the atmospheric music.
Remember,
that he could just do anything, right?
This is what I call it. Remember, it was the preppy era. Remember yes, on ATL, they even addressed it. They said you got the dope boys who are skating. You got the fly girls that are skating, right? And then they went over to the preppies, the boys that were being preppy. And that was that whole Andre 3 Stacks, Kanye West, Farnsworth Bentley.
And I just want to add one more thing to that. The 808s, though, was blending that with atmospheric and some other new sounds, too. Because that wasn't 808. I think 808 Heartbreaks was the last phase of the backpack era, and it was also implementing new styles though in that as well though at the same time.
It was the last phase of the backpack era, right? But it was introducing the blurred era in hip hop,
right? Which okay, is what Kanye helped usher in.
Yeah, so I want people to think about that, and let's not forget Pharrell. But Pharrell as a rapper did not have that same type of influence that Kanye did as a rapper, you know, so there's a difference there. But see, guess what happened in all of this? Right when all the boys, when all the men were getting clean, they were getting Dapper Dan, they were becoming preppies and preppers, right? And like you said, that last phase of the backpack era, what Jay-Z do? Get a button up. Remember that? And then he started wearing the big square nerd glasses on David Letterman, right? Remember that? And even when Kanye West went into the whole European Paris art decor in a lot of his album covers and the aesthetics of his videos, what did he do? He dropped Magna Carta, and you saw the art cover on Magna Carta.
Now stop right there. And this is the crazy thing about Jay-Z. He'll take what he knows he can do, and then he shit on what he can't.
Right.
So with 808 Heartaches and the end of the backpack era, button up, tell the new niggas button up, but death to auto-tune, which is something that T-Pain and Kanye and Kid Cudi was good at. And that's what Jay-Z always does. He'll big up what he can take from you, and he shit on what he can't replicate, which is why, hence, people remember Miss Aubrey. He called Drake Miss Aubrey.
But let's even look at that, though. I want to go to that point, and let's expound on that a little bit more. Now, Kanye West, nobody mind the auto-tunes from... They may have gotten a little tired of it with Lil Wayne and his auto-tunes.
And T-Pain. But nobody was tired of Kanye West at the time. That was a classic album when he dropped that.
And Kanye West and even T-Pain had more hits than misses with the auto-tune as well, to be fair to them, right?
Absolutely.
But guess what? Except for T-Pain. But Kanye West and Lil Wayne, who people were seeing as the pinnacle of the cool niggas in that space. Don't get me wrong, that's not the shit on T-Pain. He did his thing, right? But it was Kanye West, and then there was Lil Wayne. And whoever you ask at the time, some people may say reverse, okay? But they both were big in that space. But they both were comfortable wearing tight pants publicly, right?
Right.
Jay-Z does this. He shits on auto-tunes, and he shits on tight pants. He said, I can't wear tight pants because my knots won't fit. He was doing slick shit like that. Right. That's something that
Kanye was into. He was, you know, bringing in the tight pants along with Andre 3000. But if you talk about somebody who's also big on the new kids right now.
Yes.
Kanye West is the reason why you have A$AP Rocky and the rest of these guys.
Absolutely.
Dressed the way that they dress. Because he was the first one that did it. People were calling him a faggot. And he was the first one that was like, I don't care what you call me. This is what I like, and this is what I'm going to do.
Look, we know where Kanye West is, but let's not act like he didn't take a lot of heat for that. Like, you mean Kanye West comes out with pink polo sweaters and tight preppy pants with a Gucci backpack in an era where people still dressing like D-Block? You know,
But he did take some flack because Beanie Sigel even called him a faggot, but then tried to defend him. Like, a lot of cats had an on and off thing with him because they loved his music. Musically, they didn't have a problem with that. Some of them wasn't feeling 808s. But before that, they fucked with his music, but they weren't into his style of clothing.
And that's what I'm saying.
The other person who took heat too, like you brought him up, was Pharrell.
Yes.
Niggas was talking mad shit about how Pharrell and Kanye West dressed.
Well, let's quantify all this. And that's my point. I said, you know, for the era that we see right now where guys are comfortable, where you can get... you know, if you're talking about a Lil Pump, you know, or if you can get
a Uzi, whoever,
Lil Boat, Yachty, all of them, these guys can comfortably walk in this space because Kanye West character cross as well as Pharrell, right?
Which is why Drake felt comfortable with Take Care stuff because Kid Cudi and Kanye West did 808 Heartbreaks, and that was about a male perspective of heartbreak between to death to his mother,
right.
But also relationship. He was pouring his soul out about his romantic relationships, which ushered in a new era of what Drake has been able to quantify.
Yeah, and you know, even dealing with the dress code, because I remember, you know, being on the websites, and I remember when Kanye West was becoming more overt with his fashion taste, and I'm talking about College Dropout. This is College Dropout, Late Registration is where he got that quote unquote fag pushback from the rap community, right? Where dudes was talking about, you know, this, that, and the third, and they was questioning him, and Kanye West got irritated. He said, look, dog, I'm not gay. Like, I like to dress, and so what if you look at gay dudes, they dress well. Aren't we supposed to dress well in, you know, hip hop, right? So what was interesting, though, as that's being done, you know, Jay-Z does the suit thing. He does the suit and tie thing. He becomes, you know, corporate. He becomes bigger than life within hip hop. Because this whole, when 50 Cent came out, he could not duplicate that energy on no level. There's nothing about 50 Cent style. 50 Cent out the gate. I used to compare him to Conan. Out the gate, that's who he was, right?
Which is one other style that Jay-Z wasn't able to do. Yeah, the super gangster. To be fair to Jay-Z, it was never in his music. He never was a gun clapping type of guy. So 50 Cent and the Chief Keef type of stuff is an energy he couldn't mess with. And the super, super emotional vulnerability, the Kanye, and then to a whole nother level, the Drake with the emotional vulnerability, something that he couldn't. So yeah, those two styles, right.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see what he did, though. So what does he do? He says, well, let me create a campaign of Jay-Z leaving.
Right, I'm retiring. And it was a big fucking lie.
It was a big deal, too. Jay-Z's Black Album, Jay-Z quitting was a big deal. I mean, you had rappers. Lil Wayne would say, I'm the greatest rapper alive since the greatest rapper retired. You know, you had things like that. I mean, look, there are very few albums in rap music I remember that was just everywhere. One was Get Rich or Die Trying. That album was everywhere. I would say two was the whole Jay-Z Black Album, I'm Quitting campaign, right? That overshadowed everything else that was going on. That overshadowed everything else that was going on in rap music. Whatever went on that year in 2005 in rap music, I don't remember, because all I kept hearing about was Jay-Z's Black Album and he's quitting. I remember them playing every song on the radio. You know, and I would say a distant third that I heard in the street was T.I.'s King album.
What more can I say?
What happens when I no longer exist?
What more can I do?
And Jay-Z was going through a weird period too, because I think he couldn't find his footing. When he really looked at, because he, even on that song that you were saying right there, he said, I should be on everybody's list, when there was a period where it was questionable, were you going to put Jay-Z on your list or not? You know, because, you know, people didn't like the Blueprint 2. They felt he had lost the battle against a Nas at the time. And this was a reinvigorated Nas. Nas came out with that Braveheart album, which was Boo Boo, right? But he was celebrating. He was taunting Jay-Z in many records. He says, y'all know who it is, Nasir the letter N, and y'all already know who I'm better than, right? And those type of things. So Jay-Z comes out with the Black Album to try to stiff above Nas and 50 Cent, because like you said, he couldn't duplicate that energy.
And it worked, but here's the messed up thing, bro. Right. You are who you are.
Okay.
Like, we can feel sympathy for Kanye, but then I don't, because everybody in that industry is the same. Because remember what Kanye said to Drake. Kanye West said to Drake for what he still feels in his heart towards Jay-Z. He said, people forget this, and I'm not saying that Kanye West started the whole thing with Kanye and Drake. I don't know what happened there. But Kanye West said something interesting. Kanye West said, I can't do nothing for Drake the same way that Jay-Z couldn't do nothing for me, meaning that emotional attachment, because Kanye chose Jay-Z despite all his flaws, because Kanye was there when he saw what Jay-Z did to young Chris and all those guys. Kanye West was there, but he still chose Jay-Z because Jay-Z was his idol. Just like Drake, for a moment in time, was completely obsessed with Kanye because Kanye was Drake's idol. And you see these guys in the industry, they keep repeating the cycle, because I'm sure Drake is doing it to some other guy right as we speak. It's a perpetuated cycle that they all do. Nas, Eminem, all of them. Well, yeah. They all do it, and it's been done to them.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because like, for instance, there's a little rapper by the name of IDK. He's talented. He's like, his bar game is incredible. And I believe he does his own production. But for whatever reason, unlike what was the little dude, the one that did the Trump, and the one that was battling Logic, Joyner Lucas, right? Unlike Joyner Lucas, to be honest with you, I personally didn't feel Logic saw him as a threat. That's my personal honest opinion. I know Joyner Lucas wanted to narrate it that way, but when I kind of listened to Logic and when he talked about Joyner, he doesn't really flinch. He don't really care like that. If anything, I've kind of seen it the other way around. I think Joyner Lucas was severely irritated and agitated with a Logic. So, but there is another cat, like I said, IDK, that it appeared, however his skill level was presented to Logic, it may have gotten under Logic's skin, where IDK said, well, yeah, you know, yeah, Logic and his team, they were really trying to hammer me behind the scenes. I kind of went to them on some, you know, look up to this type of person, type of energy. But it's like we said, sometimes you just don't know how much of a threat you are when you present it to certain people. Like, even
Joe Budden gave Joyner Lucas some wisdom, though.
Yeah.
Because some industry niggas are still going to be industry niggas, but they're going to give you a heads up. If you don't listen to their coded wording or their blatant thing that they say,
when they tell you who they are.
Right. Because Joe Budden says, why did you go up to him with that idea anyway?
Right.
And let's say he did take it. So what? You shouldn't have given it to him. his manager. His manager is for Logic, not for you, number one. And then we've seen cats like that tell you, be focused on yourself, because industry niggas will be industry niggas.
And that's the thing about it with it all together, because, you know, all of these people to me, it is what it is. It's just, I see taxi cabs passing in the night. I that's how I look at it.
Right. And one last thing, that even after that, it makes sense that Eminem and wants Jonah and Logic to be good, because this feeds Eminem's ego. Everything is self-interest in this industry. Eminem didn't get Jonah and Logic together just out the goodness of his heart, but he feels they are above average lyricists, and he really needs people to carry on his legacy. So he has to, in this phase of his career, really push for those who look up to him.
Yeah, because he's not going to do it with the likes of Crooked Eye, because the energy of the culture, Crooked Eye is a talented MC, but he never had that wave of what these guys got. Like, Logic got his own built-in fan base that he can tour, certain joints go platinum with him. You know, the people that actually were fans of Eminem, they were really largely considered at the time in a space of rap nerddom where it wasn't all that mainstream cool. Like, people's like the bar structure thing. Like, even when Slaughterhouse got together, they all had some sort of ties to Eminem on some level. I would say respectfully, with the exception of Joe Budden and Joel Ortiz. Their situation was a little different.
Yeah, Joey was just there because him and Royce had a good relationship.
Right.
And right, you said, and Ortiz, he was just, you know, he was in there because
Brooklyn
nigga who could rap.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, but by the time Eminem decided to stand next to them, and that's actually what helped Eminem's legacy too. People forget about it before we even get to the Joiners and Logics, right? What actually kind of gave Eminem a little bit more credit beyond the G-Unit thing was the Slaughterhouse shit, because you had these four talented MCs come together playing with, they were some of the first ones to kind of play with their bar structures in that light.
Right, but Eminem's ego couldn't allow him to get, see, with 50 Cent, because still, even though Eminem brought 50 Cent in,
right,
even though Lloyd Banks was lyrical, it's still off of a branch where Eminem wasn't really comfortable with, and that's gangster music. So he didn't really mess with that. He came and popped his head in there here and there. When it came to Slaughterhouse, though, even though he loved them, he was in competition with them at the same time. And for him, it bigged up his ego to have what was considered the four best lyricists in hip-hop at the time. For him to keep popping in there a little bit too much, I will say, to show how he's above all of them.
Well, because that's the thing about it, though, because when I watched it, like, I'll give people a case in point. Listen to Eminem before the acquisition of Slaughterhouse and Company. Eminem, and you're talking somebody who wrote rhymes, right? Eminem rarely had punchlines in his bar structure. Eminem was shock value and extreme wordplay in the sense of rhyme schemes. He was magnificent with rhyme schemes.
And once in a while, he'll give you a good story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He can give you... Look, Cleaning Out My Closet is a great narrative piece. Right. Stan is one of the greatest narrative pieces in hip-hop. But still, that being the case, though, Eminem wasn't a punchline, riddle-maker type-driven MC. This is what made Crooked Eye a crazy lyricist.
Joe Budden.
Royce, Joel Ortiz. Like, now... Listen to Eminem on Recovery. I always said, when I listened to Recovery, it was his best Slaughterhouse rendition.
Right.
Like, Crooked Eye had a line on Slaughterhouse where he was talking about, I'm raising the bar so high it's the equivalent to stargazing, right? And I was listening to Recovery. Eminem, like, he took the same concept, but he poorly worded it in a different way. But I was like, I was listening to him. That was his attempt to do punchlines. And now moving forward, he had nothing but punchlines. That's why he kept linking up with Royce da 5'9" with that one track where the brother sounded like Nate Dogg. When he said, if you don't give me the head, I'll take it and attach it. Whatever the shit he said, he was talking about Nicki Minaj and all that stuff. That was his best Slaughterhouse attempt.
But it was nice.
Yeah.
But I feel that they still do it better. It's like during that time with Kanye,
right,
50 Cent, and Lil Wayne was just the masters of hip hop, Kanye West was a consistently better storyteller than Eminem. And we're talking about consistently. Of course, though, Eminem has dropped top 10 worthy story of songs that he rapped. You know, Lose Yourself, Stan, and Clean Out My Closet. Then you had Lil Wayne, who was punchline. He was punchline heavy.
Yes,
forget
he
about
was.
That. Because Wayne is also very influenced by East Coast rap music, even though he still stays true to the aesthetics of the Southern culture in Louisiana and stuff like that. Very heavy. So he was punchline heavy.
Oh, yeah. He and had then, a lot of them.
And then you have 50 Cent, who's just a troll, gangster nigga. And those three type of things, Eminem felt insecure at that time. Remember, Eminem already showcased that to you. He proved it. He said he was going to do a diss record on all of them, but then he decided, with the exception of 50 Cent, because that's his guy, but he was going to do a diss record on T.I., on Wayne, and
Kanye,
but decided against it.
Yeah, he. You know, you're right about that. And, you know, there's some also footnote MCs that are, I feel, are even more impactful than Slaughterhouse that people tend to forget. I like that you brought up Lil Wayne because, look, there was a period, and I'm talking about me. There was a period when I was listening to Wayne, and he had so many punchlines. I was like, what the fuck? They're like, this is Fabulous level. Fabulous was one of them. And then let's not forget Cassidy. Nobody was playing with punchlines like that until Cassidy got in the game. And people got to be, that's what Cassidy was praised for. He said, come on, I be laying clowns down like futon. You know what I'm saying? Like, when he had things like that, and again, that's that Philly culture too. You see what I'm saying? Because this is something young Chris was a balance of. Young Chris had punchlines, but also he was just a balance of, he had his rhyme schemes as well.
A great point real quick, because Philly has the most punchlines.
Yes.
If you're talking about as a culture.
Yeah.
And they don't give enough credit, because every region has something that they've, that's been their specialty, their special power in the rap game that has been utilized by icons and legends. And they've been given the credit. But yes, Philly, their specialty and their power has always been punchlines.
Hey, you know, my personal opinion is, I always felt Cassidy had a huge influence on Lil Wayne. Because, don't get me wrong, Lil Wayne had great wordplay before. But I remember after Cassidy, like, his mixtapes was bubbling underground. Remember, there was, oh my God, man, this podcast, I don't want to go all over the place. I know you guys are missing us, but I do want to say this. We forget the prominence of the mixtape at that time. We forget the prominence of the mixtape. Mixtape Kings, Cassidy, Fabulous, Lil Wayne,
right.
G-Unit Radio.
Right.
Right. So those guys are still, and they're switching off with each other. They're being featured on each other's joints. And I remember listening to Wayne, his bar game when it came to punchlines became better. But Cassidy was shutting everybody down. It was between Cassidy and Fabulous and an early Lloyd Banks, not the one now, an early Lloyd Banks, that those were the three punchline kings at the time. So it is interesting. Then out of that space comes the fruition of the likes of the Royce da 5'9"s and the Slaughterhouses. But to the point to be made here, just like we say about Jay-Z incorporating elements of young Chris's flow, which is completely understated, same thing happened with Eminem incorporating elements of the Slaughterhouse flow. And that's what and really Joe Budden talked about that when he had his quote unquote airing out of Eminem.
Also Yellow Wolf.
Yeah.
People forget Yellow Wolf got a little bit irritated with Eminem because Eminem even tried to take on his elements of Yellow Wolf style.
Oh, you're wearing all the black, you know?
Right. And that pitchy thing that Yellow Wolf does, like Eminem was doing that and people was like, yo, please stop rapping in that style. The punchline stuff works for him when he doesn't, when he's not, okay, when he's doing Joe Budden musical Lil Wayne punchline, he's good. He's exceptional. That's where he shines. When he try to do on the street, what's they call that? What's DVDs? Those
You talking about Smack DVDs?
Smack.
When trunk
he,
music.
When he does the Smack punchline, he's horrible.
Yeah,
that's an awfully hot coffee pot.
Yes,
you know, horrible. Mm-hmm. And people sometimes get confused because there is a difference. People,
yeah,
there's a difference from when you're doing punchlines and you're writing your bars down. It's not off the cuff, but you're writing your bars down. You do what Joe Button does, or Royce, although Royce can do off the cuff too, but he's better at writing as well. There's a difference between that, and there's a difference between off the cuff, smack DVD, battling, off the cuff, off the dome of your head. And this is, and here's the thing about it. Some people say, well, Sincere, Eminem did battle rap. Yeah, but people forget he lost against Rhymefest when he was doing battle rap. He lost once again against Rhymefest. And then when he came back into it, the whole smack, he started to try to copy off of the guys who were like the kings of the smack, you know, battle rap, you know, era. He started to copy off of them, and it just it loaded Lux and all that, and it didn't, it was not a style that fit him.
I'm glad you brought up that, because again, this ties into what happens in the industry, that these people are going to incorporate things that they like. I mean, people can view the Jay-Z situation whether they hate him or not. I feel like this: if somebody's big and they have a lot of power, a lot of notoriety, and you doing something that's just, yo, it's nice, and they like it, guess what's going to happen? They're reaching for the cookie. So let's go back to when you brought up Smack. Loaded Lux, people remember Smack DVDs. He was considered one of the all-stars of that, right? I mean, his legendary battles, his wordplay, his delivery. And remember now, look, we ain't going to act like Cassidy was not ready to battle Loaded Lux. He was not looking for it. Loaded Lux said, they asked him, they says, who do you want to battle? He says, I want to battle Cassidy. I remember there's an old clip online. Cassidy runs into Loaded Lux. Loaded Lux is doing this thing at a battle, right? Cassidy walks in. Remember, this is R. Kelly Hotel Lobby Cassidy. He's already sold.
If you want to come to my hotel.
Right. So he comes in. He a Philly nigga. Loaded Lux, I believe he was either in Philly or he might have been in Harlem. Wherever it was, I think it was Philly. Because New York and Philly niggas in the underground DVD world was battling the shit out of each other. And they gave some of the best bars back and forth. So Loaded Lux is battling. He's doing his thing. And then he turns and he sees Cassidy. Cassidy sees him, but it's kind of like he's shading him. It's like a nigga shade, right?
Right. And can I put in why I think that was? I think Cassidy is a crazy punchliner, but Loaded Lux was able to do story and punchline and fuse them together, which is why he reigned supreme for such a long time in the battle world.
Yeah.
Cassidy couldn't do that.
Well, even when people noted, remember now, one of the things that was celebrated with Cassidy's career early on is him getting Freeway. Freeway is not the best battle rapper, you know, but when people heard them two going back and forth, you know, it was like, oh, okay, as they say in Philly, the young bull got him, right? But to your point about what you said about Loaded Lux also has this brilliant thing he does where he pulls things out of the air. Loaded Lux does this thing where he pulls things out of the air. And Cassidy was aware that Loaded Lux had said what he said about him. That's why when you look at the video, it's the first time they crossed paths with each other. It was not friendly. Loaded Lux was real cool. He Harlem nigga. You know, they got this natural troll shit going on where they say what they say. They still smile at you when they see you, right? So Cassidy walks past him. It was a weird moment that everybody's like, yo, he didn't even acknowledge him. You mean to tell me this dude is the hottest guy on the underground circuit? Now, fast forward. Loaded Lux disappears for a couple years. The whole smack circuit, he was still out there, but it just kind of faded. And people wanted to get more into enjoyable things. And it just wasn't what it was. And you had the Slaughterhouse, all of them come out, right? Smack decides to come back. And guess who he pulls out? Loaded Lux comes out. And he delivers what is people consider one of the better battles was when he went against Calico. And even when he had his gaffe at the beginning, you know, whether people thought it was intentional or not, he definitely killed Calico in the last two rounds, right? So it was buzzing everywhere. Even Jay-Z shouted out Loaded Lux. He was like, wow, that's crazy, right? Lupe Fiasco, even now, go listen to Lupe's style. This is what we're talking about, styles. Lupe right now is trying to challenge niggas online. And I call it the freestyle battling New York nigga preachy flow. He got the same flow as Loaded Lux. You know, it's that I'm preaching to you, son, type flow.
Right.
So when Loaded Lux did that, you notice a lot of guys started lifting that because Loaded Lux gave such a brilliant performance. Now, we may not know where Loaded Lux got that particular flow from because it's like when people first saw the moonwalk, they didn't know Michael Jackson was influenced by the little street kids on the street and particularly tap dancers from the 1930s as well.
I was going to say that the moonwalk, which now is being coined the moonwalk because
of Michael.
But that dance move has been around
for a while,
for a very long time in black culture. You know, especially when you go on
the vaudeville circuit.
The vaudeville circuit.
Yes, absolutely.
You.
Yeah.
The vaudeville circuit.
Yeah.
And I mean, those artists from singing to dancing and everything were extremely gifted. So yeah, a lot of stuff start off early, you know, but it's a different thing because, you know, Jackson, one thing he was good at was giving credit to the culture.
Right.
He'll be like, yo, that James Brown. Know that the Nicholas Brothers. Know that Fred Astaire. No.
Charlie Chaplin.
That Charlie Chaplin. Oh, no, that, you know, the vaudeville circuit. You know, he definitely gave credit to influence, just like Prince. But at that time, I think a lot of them, rap is more egotistical, number one, and is more vicious in that way.
And it's highly individualistic.
Right, but
yes,
especially during that time, I think there was used to be a time where artists love to say the legends that they just took a little bit from, but how they made it into their own. That's why you don't get those type of conversations anymore. Like, you may get a little bit with Jay-Z once somebody's already dead, like a Biggie.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, it's always still kind of like shady, like how, you know, people address. But you know, a lot of them don't feel comfortable.
Well, because it is, like you said, it's highly egotistical. But even, you know, when Loaded Lux came out with that flow, and I remember even now Lupe running around with it, everybody loved the flow so much because it's a choppy flow. You can put so much of knowledge born wisdom and you and enlightening your opponent on stage. I think Loaded Lux did it the best. I think it was cool. And that's Loaded Lux style, though. That's always been his style. But sure enough, since he was the all-star in the underground circuit before, he comes back. He reinvigorates the battle scene. Like, everything, they can say what they want to say. Some people may feel he a crackhead. People talk shit about him. But one thing you can say is that he's largely responsible. Him and Smack are largely responsible for resuscitating the battleground circuit right now. Now, but guess what happened? Eminem saw that. Jimmy Iovine saw that.
And Drake saw that.
Interscope saw that, right? Yeah, and Drake saw that, right? And remember what they did. They had Loaded Lux battle Hollow the Don. At the Interscope. They had Loaded Lux battle Murder Mook, right? Which they got tension with each other historically. And then they had Joe Budden battle Hollow the Don, right? And then, like you said about Drake and the K-Dot situation, what we're saying is this, is that in the industry, these big names, when they see something they like, they're going to take it.
And Smack, though, and Loaded Lux, and they still have time, but they're the ones who have to straighten that shit out. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who have to partner up with corporations like, I don't know, Warner Brothers or CBS or whoever, so they can have that market coined off.
Right.
You know, if they keep doing it the way they're doing, letting Eminem and all these other dudes do what they do, they're going to be out of existence. And then they're going to be the black founders that we talk about 100 years from now in a market that's predominantly ran by white people. So people got to smarten up.
And I agree with that, but also you just lose traction, period. Sometimes, you know, like right now, what I do know about the battle scene, there are a lot of black curators who have gotten their own smack on, and they've taken some of those marquee battle MCs and they've pieced them together and built their platform up. So it's like it's more than just competition for Smack, you know.
But that's the thing. Yeah. Smack could have had all regions,
all of them
have that, and he's like the top at the head, the president, right? But you have mayors, you could say. Or governors. You have governors of each region. So you could have a guy who gets a lot of money that you pay through your system. He's the governor of Smack in Louisiana, Smack in Texas, Smack in Georgia. Him and her, women too. And you could have easily coined that. But, you know, there's some people. And then also, I don't know what the finances are, too, to be fair. I don't know what the roadblocks were. But I do think that people got to not run into celebrities. Skip the celebrity. Go straight to the business.
I think for Smack, I think it had a lot to do with finances. Because look how fast Interscope pieced that little shitty battle together. And it was trash. I'm not trying to be funny. It was trash. They had microphone issues. You could tell the people that even structured the battle, they didn't. That's not what they were used to doing. But I do agree. I felt one thing I had always been critical of, like, you know, the whole Smack thing. I thought if you traveled around, it'd be a better idea. You know, have a circuit, you know, and even have national competitions, too, because you're taking some of the six same dudes from different five boroughs and they're sharpening each other. But how good are they against other MCs from across the region?
Right. And if it's a financial issue, then just go to the key markets. You already in New York. You have New York City.
Right.
You have Philly. You have Atlanta. You have Houston and Chicago and L.A. Leave it there for a while, then go international. Go to Paris. Go to Japan. And then once you really quantify the overseas markets, then you come back to the States and any other areas that you feel are coming up as well, then fine. You add them to the list. Then you add Minneapolis. Then you add this place and that place on as well.
Or you can go to Rock Nation. No, but
so Jay-Z can't fuck with you and then shit on you at the same time.
Hey man, look, all jokes aside, man, you know,
getting it.
I'm telling you, and people don't understand this game, man. You know, I think for those, like we say, newbies, you know, if you're coming in, I think people should study Jay-Z more than just the music. I think you should study how he moves, because Jay-Z has survived in this industry largely because he has a lot of savage in him. People don't like, because of how he presents himself, he has far more savage in him than 50 Cent. Far more. Because at a certain point, 50 didn't want to adopt nobody's style. He didn't give a fuck after a point, and he just rather moved on. Jay-Z, I want to be king in all spaces. Business, right. Music,
oh, no,
culture.
That is true. 50 Cent only adopt Ja Rule style, but that was a fuck you.
That was a personal thing.
That was a
thing.
Personal vendetta. After my cheddar, play with my pockets, meet my Beretta.
Yeah. Yeah,
I got 21 questions.
Look,
21 questions is a Ja Rule track.
Look, this is what I was about to say. People keep talking about Wankster. Wankster is a funny troll track.
Right.
I think the biggest fuck you track to Ja Rule was 21 questions.
Oh, it was. And it's all about us. And it's about us.
Because think about it. You could have easily had Ashanti singing that hook and Ja Rule rapping.
Right, right.
You know, and I think 50 Cent, he had that shit-eating grin in the video.
Yeah.
Like, I'm being successful with your formula.
Right.
That's why I just always felt 21 questions. Yeah.
Let's touch on, before we close out, let's touch on Kim Kardashian real quick.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even touch on that. We got all over it with hip-hop.
No,
yeah,
this was a great conversation.
Yeah,
and Auntie Rocky.
Yeah.
Now that Donald Trump, a.k.a. Mr. Possible Pedo, who was friends with Jeffrey Epstein, like, everybody's going to forget about all that just to focus on A$AP Rocky. But how do you think that's going to go? You think that's, you know, because Trump has the African-American community supports A$AP Rocky. First of all, we're not a monolith. That everybody supports A$AP Rocky, although they feel what happened to him was not right.
But I don't know any black person that knows A$AP Rocky outside of what just happened to him.
Right, but then you do have falsers. It's like what Ron Emanuel said.
Yeah.
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
Or you create a crisis to create that answer to it. But nonetheless.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Nonetheless, this is all like.
It's theater.
It's all theater.
It's theater.
Thing that all that. It's all theater.
You know how I feel about this, and CIA.
Right. That's why don't pick a side. Pick your side.
Yeah.
You got to pick your crew and people who are loyal to you. Never go out on a limb for people who aren't loyal to you.
All I can say is pick your brand of alcohol and watch everything.
Right.
You know,
and take that genius and shop it to actual companies. And then I want to just say this real quick.
Okay.
A lot of people demonize the companies. No. The reason why you get fucked over because you got fucked by a celebrity or you didn't believe in yourself pertaining to the business. If you create a good contract, you saw what Master P did with the distribution deal.
80-20.
That's why Master P, ain't crying about corporations. Look at the deal, even though him and Tyler Perry having a little bit of a drift right now.
Yeah,
but
that ain't nothing.
Yeah, but look at the deal that Tyler Perry made. I love Prince as a genius, a musical genius, but you got to understand the time that he signed that bad deal. That's why he had an issue. But if you sign to Warner Brothers and you sign a deal for distribution where 80% goes to you, or whatever you what deal you sign to a company, you won't have an issue as long as you believe in yourself and you sign a contract properly. Now, where you see a lot of people actually run into an issue more so of the time is when they trust an agent, when they trust a celebrity. No.
Yeah. I feel like this, now that I'm looking at everything, you know, I felt it was a CIA. I think it's a central intelligence operation. You know, I tell you where I came to that conclusion is when Sin showed me the Dapper Dan video, the little short documentary, and Dapper Dan's kind of getting his little wave right now. But on the tail end of that, and ASAP Rocky, to be fair to the jug-headed boy in this regard, but we know he loves fashion, he was definitely one of the loudest voices that was kind of championing Dapper Dan's legacy in the millennial space. You know, because there was a lot of and a lot of y'all fronting right now that are not East Coasters. I'm not talking about, you know, East Coasters. I'm sure Harlem cats, they all know about Dapper Dan. All New York niggas know about him. But guys outside of New York, they were not familiar with the Dapper Dan story. I know that for a fact.
No, yeah. I mean, their influence did extend to the South, but they didn't know why.
They heard the name. A lot of niggas heard the name, but they didn't. They was thinking like Carl Connie or Crosses. Right. So, but this is my thing. Jay-Z has Meek Mill. Kanye and Kim will have ASAP Rocky.
Those are their children. Their political children. And they're going to battle each other. You think ASAP and Meek Mill going to have a diss record towards each other?
I'll say this. Now that I'm looking at it, I think ASAP Rocky is... I think ASAP is ASAP Rocky enough to come out and promote Donald Trump.
One last thing, too. I think it proves that ASAP did choose Kanye over Drake. Don't you think that proves it now? The fact that Kanye and Kim are supporting ASAP Rocky, well, those rumors about him snitching on certain things about Drake could be possible.
Could be. Well, I will say this. I think ASAP Rocky will come out and he's going to speak highly of Donald Trump. You know, and I think for that, in the industry, his career will be rewarded. And I think it's just a sacrificial lamb. I think this was open for Trump to conduct this. You know, because now they've been doing their campaign for possible reselection, as I call it, a reselection. The Democrats have not offered culturally anything for a selection to happen on their half.
And the American public is stupid. Actually, there are a lot of impeachable offenses that Trump has done.
Oh, legitimately.
Legitimately, where there's a paper trail, even in the Mueller report. But people are so weird.
Right.
And they think when you say things logical, they think that that much means you're for Democrats. So, like, you say something logical about Trump, oh, you're a liberal, you're a Democrat.
Liberal, Democrat.
It's like, I've never seen...
Get off the plantation.
As a young adult...
Yes.
I mean, the retardation, I don't know, is this something in the water? What the hell am I missing
This
here?
Is the Mandela effect.
Whoa, that could be true, man. Yeah. Maybe there's something going on here.
I think that was another CIA situation. I think they put that out there to distort reality.
A psyops.
Yeah, I think it is a psyops. I think this, now that we know that Trump is talking about this right away and Kim Kardashian's name is floating up, and like you said, we know that ASAP Rocky has chosen Kanye's nuts, you know? I just think this is all a play. At the very most or least, ASAP is sitting in a bad hotel in Sweden right now.
Oh, he's eating well. Yeah, fine.
When do I speak?
And he's going to be looking fly, and then with his Whitney Houston scarf, and he's going to be talking about how this happened to him and that. He's on his Meek Mill shit now.
I broke a nail. And it's something, because you said it yourself, the Carters and the West. Or Wes's are still kind of look like they're having their little civil war, even politically, you know. So Kim is in the White House, and then you got Jay-Z, you know, talking about prison reform.
Right, because remember, Jay-Z and Beyonce was in the White House with Obama. Now
they were.
Kanye and Kim are in the White House with Trump. So they still have their little beefs with each other, but it's okay.
Cold talk.
But yes, the princess of prison reform is on the case.
Kanye, like, got on Kim, asked her to call Jared Kushner. What we're told is Kushner then
talk to Trump,
who supposedly got his Secretary of State working on ASAP's release. But several questions remain. So we talked to the Swedish ambassador on TMZ Live about why ASAP's in custody even though he hasn't been charged.
Mr. Myers is in detention, waiting for an investigation to be completed. And that's how it works in Sweden.
But what about the guy who started the fight with Rocky, who's out free right now?
I cannot comment on the other case because I don't know exactly the naming of what crime he is accused of.
Something's rotten in the state directly above Denmark. But don't worry, ASAP. Kim's on the case.
And on that note, everyone, thank you for supporting us. Please download radio.com app. Again, radio.com. Download the app. I understand if you're on Spotify, iTunes, and all that, and you like to listen to Thought Crimes on there, we appreciate it. But download that radio.com app. And also make sure you subscribe to Thought Crimes on our YouTube channel. On our Instagram, follow us at ThoughtCrimes1984. On Twitter, Thought_Crimes. And again, radio.com for the podcast. That's radio.com. This is a movement, TC movement, Thought Crimes movement. You want people who are legit, who's about the people? You got it right here. And also, I want to give a big shout out to Father Godson, a.k.a. Yasun. This is where you hear the great instrumentals by him. And also, we're about to play a joint from Brandy Kane again. Trouble in Crenshaw.
Shouts
man.
Out to BK.
BK, man.
Thank you for Brandy downloading Kane. This podcast.
Peace.
You're tuned into the Digital Soapbox Network.